Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Right, there you go, boys. We're recording now. Get professional.
We're rolling. Okay, cool. Game face on. How are you doing, Phil?
I'm good, Tim.
Another weekend, another wedding?
It is. It's so last 5 weeks has been 3 weddings, 1 stag do, and my own birthday. So it's been a...
You've had your birthday?
It's been a tough month. My birthday last...
We said happy birthday on the last podcast,
JB. 2 weeks ago. 2 weeks ago was my birthday.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah. I was going to say, we didn't do anything for it, did we?
Did we? Can't even remember.
He's been going to loads of weddings. It's fine. You have that little couple of years in your life where they all conspire. It's constantly. I had that a couple of years ago.
It's awful.
I'm glad you're with us, Phil.
It was a good wedding. Congratulations to Fiona and Danny.
You don't mean that. I've read your texts. I read the text about the socialist couple.
Right, and, come on.
Just one thing I will say.
Yeah.
We need to have a trip up to Scotstown, up to Glasgow at some point. The wedding was in Glasgow, and the west end of Glasgow is lovely.
I'm not convinced.
So, well, maybe we'll go up next season and try it out. Maybe we could go pick an Ulster game in Glasgow.
Ooh, maybe.
I've only heard good things about Glasgow, and lots of people have been...
No, that isn't true. No one has only heard good things about Glasgow.
All right, fair enough.
I've only heard good things about Sierra Leone, especially in the spring.
All right, recently I've heard lots of good things about Glasgow, and people suggesting that it's a better night out than Edinburgh.
Things about Glasgow, that's amazing.
Right, okay, I think with that we'll get on, shall we?
Hands in.
Let's get on with the podcast then, the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast. Once again, hands in and pod on three. 1, 2, 3.
Pod.
First and foremost, hello to everybody in Glasgow. And thank you very much, everybody that's listening to the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast. Thank you for making us the number one rugby union podcast in the United Kingdom. But also, boys, I will just add...
And the world.
The world, well, possibly. I've been having a little look at some of our worldwide iTunes ratings, and you have to change your settings in iTunes, but so we've never seen them before. But thank you very much, and I would say just take a moment of your day. We don't ask for any money. We want the podcast to be free. We want you to be able to enjoy it. All we ask for, if you enjoy the podcast, is a moment of your time to go and leave us a review on iTunes. Where do you want to go first? How about the States?
Yeah, see that? Absolutely, it's the States.
The States, they're so polite. They're just like... Guys, really like this. Thanks so much for your hard work. Thank you. And there's someone, an American, SoCal from California.
Oh, yeah.
If this podcast was in the Pro 12, it would be Connacht.
Huh. The only real team.
I disagree. I think we'd be Toulon. But anyway.
Toulon in the Pro 12?
Yeah. Actually, didn't they? No, they applied to join the
Premiership. Luke, back in the UK, back in Blighty, Luke the English fella said, more explosive than a Dan Bigger tantrum.
Excellent.
Very much like that iTunes review. And Mr. Photo 2459 says, segs as slick as a Los Jaguares offload. Wow. And banter that even the Hask and Cowhead would be proud of.
So they only work half the time, our segments. Less than that.
When they do work, they're incredible.
Oh, wow.
So please, iTunes reviews, find us online at Rugby Podcast on Twitter. And we've had lots of people once again giving us plenty of thoughts. So this podcast, boys, we've obviously got the Southern Hemisphere Internationals to preview and look ahead to. Some big, big games there. Massive. Are you holding out any hope for Wales in New Zealand, Jay?
None. Absolutely none. None. The more I think about it, the more depressed I get. There was an article today from Gareth Ainscombe, who was quoted on saying Wales need to be positive, which makes me think they're not very positive. You know, if that's the advice you're giving to your squad, it doesn't bode well.
Well, maybe more positive was Sam Warburton saying that if Wales win, which would be the first win in New Zealand in 63 years, if Wales win, he will not celebrate because he wants it to just demonstrate that winning once isn't enough.
Yeah, you could have said that before the England game. Not anymore, I'm afraid, Sam. Look, if they win, it's great. It'll be like Michael Bisping last night knocking out Luke Rockhold in the UFC. I never saw it coming. I even tweeted that it wouldn't happen. If it happens, fantastic, but it's not going to, so let's forget it.
So Sam Warburton won't have to put that into action can not celebrate. England go to Australia. Just briefly, Phil, how do you rate England's chances?
A little bit mixed. I'm fairly positive. I think most people are fairly positive, given Eddie Jones has been in for 6 months now, not lost a game, generally been performing competently without being outstanding. And the performance against Wales gives some heart, particularly when you consider that the backbone of the Saracens side and a few Exeter players as well, with like Slade and Noel, will be coming in. So reasonably positive. I'd love a series win, but I think if we got just one victory over there, there's some definite positives to take out of that.
Which, well, I won't ruin what you will hear later this week, because there's going to be two podcasts this week. This one you're listening to right now, thank you very much for listening to that. Subscribe, by the way, on iTunes or on Acast, where you can find us. And then this next episode will just get delivered straight to you. But what happened was, JB and myself, because Phil was at this wedding that we mentioned,
selfishly,
had a chat with, we went and sought out the egg chasers in Australia.
Yeah, we certainly did.
The Green and Gold podcast, who talk about all things Australian rugby, and we've done a little bit of a... It's like all the Marvel movies at the minute sort of have all the superheroes.
I used to get excited for Marvel movies. I don't know. I don't even know what they are. I don't even know... What's this Deadpool thing all the kids are talking about?
I haven't watched it, but apparently it's very good.
Yeah, very Ryan Reynolds. I don't know either.
But lots of you have Batman and Superman appearing together. So, you know, why not combine and unite the forces of the two greatest rugby podcasts in each hemisphere?
Exactly.
Green and Gold in Australia and the Egg Chasers rugby podcast from the UK.
Inter-hemispherical chat.
I don't think that phrase is going to catch on.
I think it will.
But you will hear what happened when me and JB had a natter with Matt and Hugh, and the two podcasts combined to preview England v Australia in great depth. So keep an ear out for that one, and like I say, subscribe. And then Ireland have been dealt a couple of blows. The Carney brothers and Johnny Sexton out of their games against Argentina.
That's big.
I think the Carney boys might actually be a bit of a blessing in disguise.
Yeah, I was potentially talking about more Sexton.
Sexton is massive.
Sexton is not massive.
Not massive.
The loss losing of Sexton is
losing
massive.
Sexton is enormous. Losing the guy who has been the best fly half in the Northern Hemisphere for a number of years, and really makes them tick. Jared Payne could actually go to fullback and fill in more than competently. He plays there most of the time for Ulster. He's a very, very handy fullback. And that does potentially allow McCloskey to come in. Although, has McCloskey actually been called up?
No.
Madigan, Gilroy and Matt Healy and Tiernan O'Hallahan from Connacht.
You wonder if this could be that little opening, that little door ajar, and Matt Healy takes his chance and then cements his spot
on. I really hope so.
Yeah. Just before you were talking about comments that Warren Gatland had made and other various Gareth Ainscombe, had made on Wales. The best one was on Monday last week. Tuesday last week, after we'd recorded the podcast, Scott Williams, following Wales's disappointing performance against England, I'm holding up the headline. Scott Williams says Wales need improvement to compete with New Zealand.
Oh, thanks.
Well done. Well done, Scott.
No, I think our efforts would be adequate to go down there and beat them.
Another performance like that and we'll be fine.
Yeah. It's going on really well.
It's tough. A weekend without rugby has been tough, hasn't it?
It has. Because normally there'd be Super Rugby to watch as well.
Super Rugby was the killer.
I mean, and as we speak, it's currently 22-8. There has not been a single rugby game. There are a few about to kick off.
What? Oh, yeah, French.
French, because they all play.
Oh, yeah.
They all play in 5 minutes. They all kick off in 5 minutes.
Don't Saxons play as well?
Do they?
No, I think it's next, because they only just landed in South Africa, didn't they? Did they play midweek, maybe?
Oh, they play midweek, maybe, yeah.
It's a farce. The whole thing's a farce.
It was interesting. Did you see a lot of the boys were tweeting from their flights?
That's against the law.
Or tweeting from, not in the air.
When they're on the tarmac.
Against the law? Law's the law.
Well, it's not now, is it? Because you can get planes with in business class. You can get Wi-Fi and stuff.
Oh, especially American domestic flights and stuff.
I like to leave my phone on to see how high I can get before I lose signal. Does anyone else do that? I feel a little bit rebellious.
But it was quite interesting to see that the England main team, whatever you want to call them, the first team, they were all business class with their own, basically a lie-down bed with their own compartments. Whereas the Saxons were all in economy. They were like four men to a row, no leg room.
I like that.
Imagine being like the small Japanese woman sandwiched between, I don't know, Kim Brooks.
I like that. I think that you should, I'm jesting a little bit, but in general, I like the principle that you have to earn that business class. And it's like when I looked at the under 20 World Cup captains shockingly wearing trainers in Manchester Town Hall.
That is a heritage, it's a grade one heritage listed flaw, that
team. So you're accepting that when you're allowing that.
Well, no, what I'm saying is they should have laid down some artificial turf and had them
exactly. It's not beyond the wit of man, is it?
Just roll in some artificial turf.
Or how about this? Don't wear your kit.
Yeah.
Don't wear your kit. If you're going to wear trainers, don't wear your kit.
But some countries, New Zealand being the main one, will not let anyone but a full New Zealand All Black wear
full
New Zealand All Black
shirt.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. Kits, right? We should apply the same rules to kits as Gurkhas apply to their knives. If you pull out your Gurkha knife, you've got to draw blood.
Yeah.
Right? If you put on your kit, you've got to play rugby. You can't be wandering around a Photoshop.
So where I work now, the studios that we work in, right opposite us is some football pitches. So just when I'm doing some work on the computer, I'll watch some people doing like five-a-side football, and you see these fully grown men, full kit wankers, wearing the full kit, socks, shorts, and
I gotta say,
when
I go to rugby training, I like to wear full kit. I like my kits to match.
Well, there's very few places in the UK that you see guys walking down the street in full kits.
However,
I've spent some time working in Liverpool, and it's just about that. You will see guys wearing full, including socks, just walking around this, like 20-odd-year-old blokes, 30-year-old blokes,
Liverpool. I think there's a certain age where you can't wear sports tops.
You have to wear it at the right time.
No, full stop, you can't wear them.
Into the dungeon.
Maybe a throwback jersey or something like that. But
yeah, throwback jersey.
I like the idea of keeping the first team jersey as exclusive. Let's just, kids up to a certain age.
Let's just address this a second, right? So the difference in body type between Phil and a professional rugby player isn't huge. I mean, you could maybe be mistaken for a semi-pro player. The difference,
which he was not so long ago.
Yeah, absolutely. The difference, right, between a 48-year-old Scouse man, right, and Joe Allen is enormous. That's why you can't wear sports tops.
So there's a lot of men in Liverpool who have the same tattoos as some of their stars.
Get up to the same antics in bars later at night,
exactly.
Judging by certain CCTV footage we may have seen. Anyway, before we offend anyone else, I just one little.
Glasgow tick, Liverpool tick.
one other review I forgot to mention, this from USA rugby fan Lee, who said, blah, 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 big fun, etc. I really enjoy the podcast. He said, I love the perspective that Tim, Phil, and in some ways JB bring to the Northern Hemisphere game. He says, hoping that the new NBC deal that's been done with the Aviva Premiership will mean more people in America get to watch UK rugby. And he also says the only thing that's disappointing about the podcast is listening to the Cornerstone promotions, because being in the States, he's unable to participate. We need to have a word with Cornerstone about that. They need to diversify.
Or we need
to
start
out
sponsoring a worldwide courier.
Yes.
That would work well.
That would work really well. If you're listening in the United States or around the globe, you won't be able to take part in this. But, you know, Lee, you're right to be disappointed, because Cornerstone are the best razor blades out there, voted in the GQ Awards, beating Wilkinson Sword. If you have one of them, you've got an inferior product.
Correct.
If you've got a Gillette razor, you have an inferior product. Fact.
Mm-hmm.
And you, with because you're listeners of Egg Chasers, you can take advantage of an amazing offer where just for basically a couple of quid it will end up costing you, because you get a £10 discount on your first order because you're listening to us. It's just
your first order can be as little as 4 quid. If you don't go for the face scrubs and the moisturiser, which are very good, by the way, but it's from 4 quid, and you get your... finely balanced shaft, your engraved shaft.
Engraved with your own initials.
And precision engineered, German precision engineered, which is the best kind of precision engineering.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well,
razor blades.
Yeah, get your initials. I've gone with JB. Have you gone with FIL? Because that's probably the closest that you can get.
FIL. I've gone PHI.
Okay.
Which was my old...
And Tim, what did you go for, mate?
Arcade name.
I went for Tim, funnily enough. But there you go. Get your engraved shaft. And then, as Rob Hirsch has done, he sent us a picture of his shaft just poking out of his towel after a shower. Mm. Thanks for that lovely picture.
Great
of his shaft. Hashtag show us your shaft.
It's a tremendous shaft.
It really is.
It really was. It was very shiny. So, like Phil says, for as little as 4 quid, you could sample why so many people are trying Cornerstone, and because you get the £10 discount on your first order with us if you go to cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers. cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers or...
Egg 10 at checkout.
Perfect.
Because it's been a fallow week in the rugby world, we punted out on Twitter and just said, right, if there's anything you want to... want discussed or any questions you want asked, then let us know. We got loads.
I couldn't believe the response. Incredible response. So thank you to everyone who did message us.
Yeah, so at Rugby Podcast, we're going to get through some of these, but we sort of jokingly said on Twitter, oh, think of it like a rugby version of Question Time. And let's not just think of it like a rugby version of Question Time. Let's do a rugby version of Question Time.
That's a great idea, Tim.
Welcome to Question Time. I am Timbleby. We are in the historical rugby dungeon, the basement flat of JB's house. And our panellists today are Tim. Hello. JB.
Hello.
And Phil.
Hello, Timbleby.
First question. Gentlemen, third row, Duncan Muir. I'm going to have to read Duncan's question.
Yeah, you read Duncan's question. That's how it goes.
Duncan's question was, if Muhammad Ali was the greatest boxer of all time, who in rugby should be considered the greatest?
Well, I would like to say there are many greats. I mean, sometimes we use the word great, and actually, you know, I don't know where I'm going with this. The greatest rugby player of all time, Jonah Lomu.
I think Jonah Lomu is an easy go-to, and there's many, many reasons why Jonah Lomu can be categorically given as the greatest player. I think rugby is more difficult, though, because there's the different players. Mm. So you could arguably say, give me your greatest prop, your greatest hooker, your greatest second row, because they all have different requisite skill sets.
Devil's advocate, are you posthumously saying Jonah Lomu?
Well, we're not going to give it him now, are we?
In 50 years' time, when, say, maybe if he doesn't live to that long, in 50, 60 years' time, when Richie McCaw and all us are worm food, would maybe people look at it differently and say, well, Richie McCaw, he was the greatest?
It's different, partly because you're not comparing like with like, but also if you look at kind of cold, hard facts, McCaw, his appearances, his win rate as captaincy, his double captain, double World Cup, the stuff he's done with Crusaders, I think on paper he is the greatest.
Yeah.
But in terms of, if you actually look at natural talent and raw ability and the way that Jonah was unplayable for a period of time, I don't think anyone else has come close to that.
The comparison with Muhammad Ali is probably quite a good one in the sense that, in lots of ways not, but in the sense that he changed the game completely on his own and made it. He brought it into the world of so many people who weren't rugby fans.
And it was at the time when the game was turning professional, and he was a global superstar.
Yeah,
it was just absolutely enormous.
So, Jonah Lomu.
Oh, yeah. Next question from Tom Dow. Tom says, as player... Oh, no, 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 sorry. I'm going to jump onto a different one. I beg your pardon, because this is the most asked question. So, next question comes from Nick Durant, John Richardson, Screensphere on Twitter, Ben Stack, who all tweeted at Rugby Podcast, and were saying, right, OK, I want to hear what you think about the Lions, because it's a year to go, 1 year to the Lions tour passed in the last week. And so, coach, captain, and bolter... maybe the unpredictable selections that, that could happen, or the huge omission, maybe, 1 year out, your predictions for... Well, let's go captain first.
I really like Alan Wynne-Jones, but I don't think he'll be given it because he's obviously behind Sam Warburton. So with that said...
It's a tough one to pick, isn't it?
That is a tough one. So you look at the captains at the moment, Hartley... possibly, mm-hmm. but I still think question marks over his discipline. Mm. You'd imagine Hartley would be a starter, though.
I imagine if it's Gatland, he'd quite like him. And Eddie Jones does like him.
Yes. Mm. Yeah. Yeah, so maybe Hartley's not a bad shout.
Because at least you could be confident that you could pick him as captain and you would be happy with him starting the first test.
Yeah.
Whereas... Alan Wynne-Jones, amazing as he is, and he probably would get in a 15, but a year from now, who knows where the competition at second row will be.
Yeah, and yeah. I doubt Cruz and Itoji are past their best. Let's put that on.
Yeah. I would still, if I had a Lions test tomorrow, I would still start Alan Wynne-Jones.
I would.
Probably with Cruz, with Itoji off the bench.
Okay. I'm going to actually say, in a year's time, what is going to happen in a year's time? I don't think it's going to be Sam Warburton.
Sam Warburton is current Lions captain, successful Lions captain.
Yeah, he will start as well, because there's no one better than him at seven. So that's that. Is he going to be captain? I just don't see it.
But I didn't see it particularly in 2013, particularly with having like Paul O'Connell and Brian O'Driscoll, who were two other...
Yeah.
Like, O'Connell was, I think, a big surprise not to be captain, given that he was in the squad, he was a starter... He was such a leader and such an experienced player, so maybe it will go to Warburton.
That would be my call at the moment for those reasons because I think he is the automatic selection in his position.
So let's go. I'll go Warburton. Yeah, I'll just go Warburton because that it kind of stacks up. I have no one better, but I don't see it happening.
Yeah, yeah. I'm the same. And the other captains, Rory Best.
No.
Who's Scottish captain?
Laidlaw.
Laidlaw, of course.
No.
I don't think he'll start.
Not a bad shout for a start.
It's not a bad shout.
Although you've probably got your goal kickers elsewhere. Mm. But yeah, I don't see him either. So it'll be interesting to see who they do go for.
Right. coach then.
Now this is
the assumption is it would be, again, like you said, with Warburton, you know. He's the incumbent and the victorious Lions captain. Warren Gatland is the incumbent and the victorious coach.
Yeah.
But his stock has dropped since 2013, particularly in the last year.
Not really.
Do you not think?
No, I don't. I still think he's a world beater.
Oh, I'm not saying I don't think he's very good, but it's the way he's viewed is very different. There's a lot more dissenting Welsh voices than there was a year ago.
Because it's Wales and they've lost a game, you know. But in terms of Gatland, he's still probably the best man for the job. Eddie Jones has done marvellously so far. But yeah, I've always said it. If Gatland had that England team, England would have been unstoppable for the best part of a decade now. But he hasn't. He's done the best he can with Wales. We've got a much more limited playing pool. Gatland for me.
Gatland, but without Gatland ball, please.
No, absolutely. No, look, we've tried going away from Gatland ball. Wasn't overly successful. Vern Cotter, or however you say his name. Cotter. Is a tremendous...
Fern Cotton
is a tremendous operator. And I'd like him to be given a fair hearing because I think he'd do a great job as Lions coach.
I think any of the four coaches, it is quite sad.
Depressingly, three Kiwis.
Yeah, three Kiwis and an Aussie.
Yeah, it's really disappointing.
So that is a bit depressing, but I'm sure all of them could do quite a good job. Mm. It'd be interesting to see who is appointed alongside them. Like, who gets the defence coach, who gets the attack coach, whether Gatland wants to take Sean Edwards with him.
Well, of course, Gatland didn't take Sean Edwards with him last time. He took Farrell.
Farrell, yeah, who's now Ireland defence coach.
So you could take Farrell again if you wanted to.
Yeah.
If he gets selected. I think Gatland is still in pole position. Gatland probably will. In fact, I'm sure Gatland has got the job.
I thought something had been announced maybe a year or so ago, but yeah, I'm just looking for it, and there's stuff around it, but...
Not definitive.
I'm not sure if it is confirmed yet.
And any bolters or big omissions that you
Well, here's my
of.
Bolter, right? My bolter is I'm wrong about captaincy and Itoje is captain. Because that's what I wanted to call in the first place. I just can see him growing and growing and growing, and then to make a statement, this kid's captain. Let's see what he does next year. But if he has a good season, who knows? He's already captain Saracens, and they're one of the best teams in the world.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. That'd be a hell of a captain.
Which means my bigger mission would be Warburton, even though I don't think that'll happen.
He would definitely tour, short of injury.
Who would be? I'll tell you who's a bigger mission, who won't tour. O'Brien. Sean O'Brien.
Again, through injury?
Just won't tour. I don't think he'll get picked. I think he'll be injured. He won't have enough game time, and he won't get picked.
I think if he can get even half a dozen games before... If he comes back fit next season, gets half a dozen games... somewhere near back to his best, I think he'd tour.
I think it's too much competition there as well. Oh, no, actually, I think next year we're going to have a lot of competition. I think there's a lot of names coming through who we don't see as international class, particularly in Wales. I mean, Warburton doesn't even play seven for Cardiff now. So,
yeah.
Well, I pick my squad, not starting, but I pick my squad bolter about 4 months ago in Oltanderland.
Oltanderland, yeah.
Okay.
I think... He's the athleticism he's got, but then flipping second row is stacked.
Yeah, so second row is just about the most competitive position.
Maybe I'll take that back.
What is the most competitive?
I think a bigger mission could be someone like one of the English props that you'd assume would get in, like Marler
or Mac-
Cole. Cole, I don't think Cole's nailed on.
Yeah,
Cole.
Not by a long way.
So tight head, WP Nell, Samson Lee.
Yeah,
Cole's probably third choice at the moment.
Yeah, agree to that.
But I don't especially rate Cole, no. So I don't think that would be too surprising my standards. No. It'd be interesting to see, because last time there was some quite high-profile English players like...
Rob Shaw,
Mike Brown, for example, Danny Kerr, who were playing reasonably well, didn't tour.
It seems so odd now, what are we now, 3 years on?
Yeah.
All right.
Those guys, who I wouldn't dream of leaving at home now. I'd take Mike Brown in a heartbeat. I'd take Danny Kerr in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
And again, not to bash Stuart Lancaster, but I just think it kind of shows like how underwhelming his reign was.
What about a potential omission? It depends on who the coach is, but Jamie Roberts?
Possibly.
Man of the series at least once.
I mean, I would take him, but I'm just spitballing.
Yeah. Well, you look at who the others... So Robbie Henshaw, Tuolagi, if he's possibly fit.
Sorry, just to interrupt. Inside centres. Have you heard the news today, Tim?
Hey?
The news, the leaked news that Ben Teo is scheduled for his first cap and start in the first test.
Oh, you're joking.
Nope. Deadly serious. Deadly serious.
according to the Telegraph, I believe.
Yeah.
Wowzers.
That is...
And they normally know these things early.
Well, I mean, I could also say I normally know these things early because I think I called that months ago. But anyway,
peak tail. It's not going to get any better from here.
What we could be sat here next week with you two laughing at me.
Well, no, he's still in. He's in the squad. Definitely, we're not going to be laughing about that.
Yeah. Whichever way this goes, I'm in the wrong here because I on Green and Gold have predicted a whitewash for England. I do actually believe that. But then they picked Ben Teo. So if I'm right on the whitewash, I'm wrong on Ben Teo.
That was a spoiler alert for the podcast coming later this week, by the way, but that's fine.
And if I'm right about Ben Teo, I'll be wrong about the whitewash.
Yes.
I can't be right on both these things.
You can't be right about both. It will be, the real test on Ben Teo will be kind of two years down the line. Because it's happened before with people like rugby league centres, like Burgess, like Barry John Mather, like the Tompkins brother.
Oh, God, Matthew Tate.
Yeah, Matthew Tate outside centre. Yeah. So it's happened before.
Big Gav sorted him out.
If you look at some of the... England have got a checkered past with their centres. Dan Hipkiss and Ayula Rinley, for example. Sean Tame, Happy and Mike Tindall, for example.
There's Ricky Flutie.
Jamie Noon. Flutie
was
all right. Jamie Noon, not so good.
Jamie Noon, who's that horror pairing?
May and Noon.
No, May only got two caps.
Was
I think
it Noon and Barrett? Did they
Noon
play together?
Noon and Hipkiss, I think, played together.
Oh, horrible.
So you may be right, but then we realised that it is a step too far.
Twickenham would have made money out of selling Twickenham branded eye gouges.
Sulfuric acid, sir. Yes, please.
Right, at Rugby Podcast, your lion, 1 year out, your Lions coach, captain and bolters, and we can read some of your suggestions out because I think we're a little bit scratching our heads on this one. Lions captain, coach, bolter at Rugby Podcast. Tweet us and we'll give you a shout next week. Next question, Jack Pike. We'll try and make some of these a bit. In fact, I'll just do a quick one first. Tom Hemmings said that there's in football, soccer, because the European Championship's about to start, you have loads of talk about formations, but in rugby, you don't have so much. Is there anything else we can do?
That's a really interesting question. It's the thing I've thought of loads, and I'm sure someone else must have thought of this. Do you really need eight men in a scrum?
Do you have to have them in if you've got on the pitch?
I don't think so.
I don't think you do. I don't know what the laws are, but I assume you don't.
I think you do at lower levels.
I don't know.
I don't know either.
It's an interesting question.
I mean, they used to move Stephen Armitage to 10 and put Mike Catt at flanker for London Irish.
Yeah.
So those sort of things have been tried. I've always thought, like, if you had a real dominant scrum, why wouldn't you bring on a second fly half and remove a back row?
Yeah.
Or remove a second row and
you
push.
Sort of get the feeling that, I don't know, a bit of a maverick, maybe Clive Woodward for 2016 might come in and do something a bit strange like that. But
it's funny no one's tried it.
Joe Schmidt has played with, three fullbacks, as in he had Henshaw, Jared Payne and Rob Kearney, and operated a basically kick and chase game plan, which won him the Six Nations.
Yeah.
Mm. And you do have some kind of formational stuff, like a forward-back split on the bench, I guess, sort of fits that mould.
Something that Fylde used to do,
and left
was that when they'd have a midfield scrum, they would put their two wingers, Nick Rowland and Ollie Brennan, who
they're not too bad though, are they?
They're both very fast, very steppy. At first receiver, one each side, and the ball would go to one or the other, and they just have a go. And it would be try and beat, look for space outside, or be beat on the inside.
We had an awesome move that.
Just for the record, I absolutely annihilated Ollie Brennan in a cup game. He probably still remembers that.
Hi, Ollie. I remember it was something that we did at Newbury, and then when I was teaching and coaching at quite a good school, we had Redford and Chevy Pennycook, Newcastle and Bristol, and James Phillips, who's at Bristol now, was at Exeter. They were that was the back row we had.
Yeah,
and we did a move. We had a really good inside centre. It was just eight straight to 10 running at the outside shoulder of the seven, straight from the base of a scrum. It worked, and the amount of tries we scored from that were ridiculous.
Nice.
So again, it was
so just from a static scrum.
Yeah.
Big 12.
Mm-hmm.
Number eight, it's at 8 feet, and he just pops.
Yeah, yeah.
Close to the scrum to the 12.
Yeah.
Running, just basically running at the outside shoulder of the seven, so he's in between 10 and seven.
Yeah.
And just punches that hole.
And hoping that the seven doesn't react quick enough to get a full shoulder tackle, and you're hitting branches rather than trees.
But actually, what we need to bring back technicality wise, and to be, you know, football got formations. What happened to the wall at a penalty? What happened to the wall? Nine pops to the first man in the wall, and then they open up a gap and pops on through.
Who knows where the ball's gone? They could be passing it between them.
Bring that back.
Yeah, why do we use the wall? I'm sure there must be a law.
No, well, the law change was the the flying wedge? Flying wedge?
Yeah, flying wedge is illegal.
Yeah, that's illegal.
Mind you, they do sort of do that still.
They do, like, two men, one binds on the ball carrier a little bit.
That's like more of a caterpillar.
Yeah.
Right, what about this one then? Nev's Left Boot, long-time listener. Thank you, at Rugby Podcast. How long until All England locks, which are fantastic at the moment, develop Borthwick syndrome and just drone on about line-out stats?
Well, that's contagious. That's the first thing.
Yeah, now he's in there.
Yeah.
It's going to be spreading like wildfire.
I mean, look, if they take the right precautions, vaccinations and face masks, they should be okay.
You need to dilute it. So you need to get Danny Grucock or some other, like, Bakayoko Botha type to water it down.
Yeah, from what I understand, a 2-to-1 ratio is usually enough to make it non-contagious.
Just a pure cocktail of just pure Borthwick is dangerous.
Of course that's dangerous. And you wouldn't give that to any kid. From what I understand, it's perfectly easy to contain. You've just got to take the appropriate precautions.
Jack Pike, then. This one, a bit of a meatier one, and we'll get into some of the Southern Hemisphere games, I think, after this one. Jack Pike, at Rugby Podcast, to question time. Jack Pike, gentleman back there.
The gentleman that could be a girl or a woman. I can't tell. With the glasses, maybe glasses.
Hello. My question to the panel is, law changes has been a big one. It's been working in Super Rugby. Why are we always behind? Why is Super Rugby the experiment? Well, so it's twofold there.
Well, as a podcaster, it's always like, as a doctor.
Yes.
Right, okay. So as a
I think law changes are a disgrace.
This is probably most publicity question time's ever got on a sports podcast.
So there has been a lot of law changes. So I think whether it's rugby league or whether it's Super Rugby, it never seems to be the UK leagues sort of leading the way trialling some of these, does it?
No. Not always. I mean, typically you hear about these things being trialled at either like college level. Or like
Varsity Cup in South Africa.
Yeah,
that's
a big one.
That is what they normally do. And a little bit in the kind of lower tier in Australia.
In the Welsh Colleges League, that's quite a good league. So it does happen. I think, though, they're quicker to adopt them in Super Rugby than they are up here.
So, Phil, just briefly then run us through what the law changes are that World Rugby have introduced.
So quite a lot of them revolve around the scrum. So one that's... it's definitely happened already formally in Super Rugby, but they've actually been allowing it more recently in Premiership, where advantage may be played following a scrum collapse if there's no risk to the player's safety. So if the ball's at the back, play on, basically, providing there's no injuries, which refs have been doing a little bit anyway. The scrum must be ready to form within 30 seconds of the scrum being awarded, otherwise the ref stops the clock for an injury or if there is another stoppage. A scrum reset following a 90-degree wheel, the ball is thrown in by the team that previously threw it in rather than changing hands, which is quite interesting because it kind of reduces the incentive for teams to try and manufacture a wheel. The scrum half can't get in between the flanker and the number 8 when they're going around the opposition scrum half, which is probably, again, quite a good law to just allow free ball, allow the ball to play. And when the ball has been at the number 8's feet in a stationary scrum for 3 to 5 seconds, the ref will call use it in the same way as he would at the back of a ruck. So that's the scrum stuff. There's also the incorporation of the...
even if it's moving forward? Or is it,
stationary.
Stationary. Okay, all right.
3 to 5 seconds. Yeah, it stops scrums from going for the penalties.
Holding it in
and just going, squeezing for the penalty. So that's probably a good thing.
Is it a good thing? I mean, I understand that it benefits the Southern Hemisphere sides who can't scrummage as well as us. But if you put a lot of stock in scrummaging and, you know, you really work on it, surely you should be able to benefit from the penalties from destroying opposition scrum. So it's a glorious thing.
You've still got the time to do it, but you've either got to get the march on initially.
You can't get a nudge.
So if you get the nudge on initially, this is saying...
but they've done everything they can to stop that. Like,
this is saying if it's stationary for 3 to 5 seconds, so if you're marching on, you can win your penalties, happy to win your penalties. This is stopping... it's stationary, and they're just trying to
just wait till one of the props drops an elbow.
Trying to get a 50-50 decision,
so
basically.
What they'll do is they'll get the ball back to the 8's feet. And the idea is when the ball is to the 8's feet, the opposition will then loosen off. And when they loosen off, when they feel that loosening off, the back row will call it, and they'll all squeeze together.
Well, if they do that within 5 seconds, that's game on.
Yeah, I guess so.
You've still got the time.
Yeah, 5 seconds is quite a long time, actually.
Yeah, I'm all in favour of that law. So then there's another one around the law, which is, I'm a little bit confused about this, having never played in the forwards, really. So the ball can be moved backwards hand to hand once a maul is formed.
Yes.
Rather than the man taking the front.
Old school.
And him moving to the back and the players swarming in around him.
I don't think this makes a huge amount of difference either
way.
Does
it not?
No, we used to do this and then, you know, we've done both ways. The reason, I guess they think it's better protected if a guy is holding it, but it's just a skill.
You just pass one to the other, and so that shouldn't make
it. It's just the reason for having the man slip to the back is just it's less opportunity for error by passing.
Yeah, but do you know what? There's obviously an opportunity cost there. The advantage is now when that guy binds on, his initial hit will be staying. So if you think about it, you bring it down. You get someone to rip the ball and you usually get two guys over him if you're doing it the old school way, right? So old school, over. Now, with this new one, the guy who's originally ripped the ball isn't squeezing back. So because of that, he can stay in there in that really dominant position.
Yeah, like I say,
it makes no difference.
Doesn't make a huge amount of difference. Now, is there any more?
There is one more. There is one more, which I think we're all glad to see because we've specifically mentioned it a few times.
Oh, I know what it is.
And I will read this law word for word. Play acting or simulation is specifically outlawed in the game in a move that formalises resistance to a practice that has been creeping into the game in recent years. Any player who dives or feigns injury in an attempt to influence the match officials will be liable for sanction, and that sanction will be from a penalty upwards.
Ooh.
Now, there's an element of me that's just disappointed that we've got to this point where there has to be a law.
Because as soon as you make it a law, that very powerful thing of... you know, the kind of unwritten rule disappears, doesn't it? The shame.
Yeah. It is almost a shame on rugby that it's had to be written into law in black and white.
Yeah, I do agree with that. But with that said, I am happy that it's formal and hopefully it will just completely stamp it out. And it's one of those laws, like the use it law at the back of a ruck. The ref called use it. I've never seen it used. I've seen the use it call, but I've never seen them penalised because the players just do it.
Yeah.
So hopefully this is something like that, that now it is in place, we never have to talk about
it. The sanction should be severe. I mean, I'm talking like strip naked with that little bell.
Well, I say like either at half time or at full time, if you're guilty of it. Like play on as normal, but you then have to go in the stocks and
rotten fruit.
Rotten fruit.
How about the shame bin, which is like the opposite to the sin bin? You've got to stand in the middle of the park, but you're not allowed to move.
And rotten fruit.
Rotten fruit. Sorry, goes without saying.
A little bit of rotten fruit.
Just a little bit. the one devil's advocate thing I would say about all of this is, and it's kind of me adopting a JB-ism from many years ago. Is the more laws you have, the more things there are to officiate, the more complicated it gets, the more difficult it is for supporters who might not be rugby aficionados to get into it.
I do understand that point, although I do think World Rugby recognises that, and some of the laws they've introduced are trying to simplify.
Not
just in this, it's simplified. Like one of the best ones they've introduced in the past few years is the ball's not out from a ruck until it's been picked up.
Yeah.
So hands-on doesn't matter is when it leaves the ground, because that was such a grey area.
I used to do a bit of refereeing when I was teaching before I got into radio. I used to go and ref school games and stuff, and that was the one question everybody would ask you before every flipping game. What's out, ref? When's it out?
I used to. There's always
a good question.
There's
always
one stupid player, often a prop, but not always, who before he'll just shout hands on, and immediately run at the nine and like bundle over the nine. No, hands weren't on.
I'll tell you the one which gets me every time, and there needs to be consistency to this. What is classed as an eight bind? So some will say it's forearms.
Oh, I don't care.
Some will say shoulders.
Do you know what?
It does matter.
No, this is one of those laws that I think any referee that officiates that law is just ruining the game.
No, it matters.
There's no advantage to having a... Like, you take that chance. As a number eight, you can either have a full bind and give your second rows as much drive as possible, and that could help you in the drive, or you look up and look around, and it helps your defence, but you take
you
away from the drive.
That's an interesting point.
You make the call whether... If your team is all right with seven men driving and you not... Then that's fair enough.
I'll tell you where
it just creates penalties where you don't need them.
I agree,
let the boys play.
I'll tell you where it really, really messes things up. is if you've coached your back row to look at the hands and you clarify with the ref what is in, what is out. And some refs will say hands off means ball out, or breaking the bind means ball out, or in some cases, hands on ball means ball out. So if you coach your back row to look up and look at the hands which are binding on, and they go, and your back row go as they're coached, and that's a penalty, that's a disaster.
Do you know what? All this is giving more opportunities for Brian Moore et al. To just ramble on about the nuances of rugby laws. Like simplification, I'm all for.
Yeah.
Let's have more of that. And common sense.
Yes.
So Joe, I think I agree. I'm quite happy with all of those.
I played against a team once, and the ref literally did not know what a scrum bind looked like. So my opposition, who was a big lad, was binding in the opposite way to scrums usually would usually bind. Does that make sense? So if you think about it, the hooker binds underneath, right?
Oh, yeah. Well,
so
hooker's over the top, props bind underneath.
Sorry, hooker over the top, props underneath.
Yes.
This guy was doing it the other way around. So I highlighted the safety concerns to the ref, and he threatened to yellow card me.
You're not going to win that one. Oh, do you know what? We've got an apology to make, and quite a few of the questions that came through were, maybe some chat about Bristol in the Premiership.
I can't believe you missed it.
I know. Well, do you know what? We should say, because we've got lots to talk about in terms of the games coming up this weekend, and there's a long time before the Premiership season starts. Bristol fans, congratulations.
Yeah.
Bristol squad, congratulations. It'll be good to have you back. I've got good memories of Bristol. That's where I used to work in Bristol. I used to go and see him a lot. And I played a game, one of the most exciting and devastating moments of my rugby career was playing a pre-season friendly for Newbury against Bristol. It was amazing. Gareth Archer was up against, and Andrew Sheridan when he was like sometimes back row, also sometimes prop.
Yep.
I was just a kid. This was like incredible. What was the inside centre, Australian inside centre?
Gibson?
Jason Little played. It was like, wow. It was flipping heroes. And the picture on the next Bristol programme was Andrew Sheridan like in the most embarrassing situation for me, running over me. So basically,
you're probably in pretty good company from being run over by Andrew Sheridan.
Well, yeah, probably. Anyway, well done, Bristol. Looking forward to having you back. But we will talk about Bristol in great depth about what we think they need to do, where they can go. The main one would be Andy Robinson.
Bye.
See you later.
I'll just address Bristol very quickly.
Yeah, go on.
I think they might not be as successful as we imagine they will be. They are basically the Toulon of the Championship, which means they play very simple, worn-out rugby, which works against lesser opposition, and they need a little bit more than that when they come up. That's my bit.
Yeah, I think that may well be fair. Mm. They've obviously got much bigger budget than the rest of the Championship, and the players in their squad must be worth... God,
a lot
more than everyone else in the
championship. I think ditching Andy Robinson now is a fine shout.
Yeah, but who do you get? Mm. Stuart Lancaster?
Well, Stuart Lancaster.
That's what you need to survive in the Premiership. You need a good, solid culture.
How many games in the Premiership has Stuart Lancaster won?
Two?
Yeah, it's something like that.
It is exactly two games in maybe 1-2 years. 1 year.
It's not his fault he got given the England job when he wasn't ready for it.
Yeah.
You should have turned it down.
all right. Thank you for all the questions. Really appreciate it. Join us next time on Question Time. We go from a week of no rugby to, especially in the case of Saturday, a day of nothing but rugby.
Oh, it's going to be wonderful.
Oh, incredible. And I thought the first game was Wales v New Zealand, or New Zealand v Wales, but apparently not, Phil.
It's not. Samoa host Georgia at 4 a.m. UK time. I don't know if it's going to be...
Ooh.
I don't know if we'll be able to watch it. I don't know. World Rugby have in the past televised some Georgia games. I watched the Georgia-Romania game that was in Tbilisi this year. Watched that live.
Where has this been played?
This is in Apia, Samoa.
Mm. Oh, well. If that's on, I'll watch it.
Explosive encounter.
It'd be interesting to see exactly what kind of team...
Georgia have. Because,
both of them. Both of them. Because they've both got quite a lot of players playing in the top 14.
Ugh. This has to be sorted. This congestion has to be sorted.
Well, Chris Jane, friend of the pod, tweeted us.
Have you seen his tweets? That guy's a moron.
At rugby podcast.
That guy is an idiot.
Chris Jane pointed out when we were moaning about this having no rugby this weekend. He said, "Well, if you go for a global season, you'll have more weekends like this."
He doesn't know anything. Just block him.
Well, I'll tell you what, if Stephen Jones hasn't blocked him, then you know he is what you say he is.
Exactly,
yes. Yeah, that's a good litmus test, actually, isn't it?
I've no idea how that one will go because we don't know what players are involved, but if it's televised or if there's highlights, I will definitely watch that. But 8:35, you can bet your bottom dollar we will be up and watching New Zealand versus Wales.
100%.
What time is that?
8:35.
I'm not going to watch that.
Right. I will be watching it.
Here's a question. Is there a single Welshman who would make it into that New Zealand side?
Sam Baker. Sam Baker can play for any team in the world.
Yeah,
as soon as I think of someone, I think, oh, he's a cracking player.
Alan Wynne-Jones, amazing player. Ritalik and Whitelock.
Do you know what? I was thinking about Webb because I thought he played really well for the first half against
England. Aaron Smith's all right.
So I've got the current New Zealand team up here.
Go on then.
Current squad. And the most interesting thing is now that the big All Blacks have retired from the World Cup, Carter, the two centres, Nonu and Smith, McCaw, Woodcock, you've lost all of their 100-plus cappers.
Mm-hmm.
So the one thing that they are a little bit light on is some experience. You've got a few guys, I mean, they have got World Cup winners and double World Cup winners, but the highest capped player, I think, is Owen Frank, 78 tests. And then you've got a lot of guys, like in their midfield, for example, they've got a total of 29 caps between four guys.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got new guy, Tamanevalu, then Charlie Nartai, who's got one cap.
He's tremendous.
He is good. Then Fekitoa, 13, Crotty, 15.
Wow.
So you could say that someone like Jamie Roberts, to shore it up with his experience, maybe.
But do you know what, like, Charlie Nartai is class.
Charlie Nartai is class.
Oh my God.
Crotty and Fekitoa are class.
He makes time stand still.
I'm not sure on talent whether you'd have Jamie Roberts in there, but it's experience.
I think you're overlooking Jonathan Davis and Scott Williams, who are two very good rugby players, in fairness.
No, we're not saying any Welsh players poor because they can't get in New Zealand 15.
Maybe one of the centres. I mean, you'd have to have them camped together and look at them and all the rest of it.
It's North in 2013 form.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's in.
Yeah. Probably. Imagine North and Surveyor as your two wingers.
And Falau at fullback. I've always thought of that. I think about that all the time.
Toulon.
Yeah. No.
But just what you think about. Interesting one, because you were talking about double World Cup winners. Ben Franks.
How about this?
Ben Franks, as I understand it, will be staying at London Irish.
Really?
He will have a double World Cup winner playing in the championship.
Frankie.
Wow.
Which I'm only speculating on this one. I have no facts whatsoever to back this up. I'm just speculating that it's because he probably wants to leave, but no one is willing to stump up the cash.
Because he'll be on a tidy little
deal.
He'll
be on and maybe a transfer fee to buy him out of his contract, plus his wage no one's willing to spend. Anyway, that's just me speculating.
Yeah. And he's not exactly a proven commodity in the Premiership, is he? If we're honest.
No.
No. True.
The other position,
Sam Warburton, maybe at seven.
I was going to say
for Sam Kane.
The interesting one, Ardie Surveyor, who's come into the squad now, who didn't make the World Cup squad, is potentially unbelievable. He's uncapped. As things
is he
stand.
Still uncapped?
Yes.
It feels like he's been around forever, and it feels like he's got about 12 caps.
I think he's still only like 21.
Because you've just been watching all those. It feels like he's been around forever because you just constantly go to YouTube to watch videos of him, the latest video of him lip syncing in a car.
That might be true.
22 he is.
Prodigious talent.
So yeah, so you got Kane, you got Survey, you got Liam Squire, Elliot Dixon, who's more of a six really.
So we're saying potentially Roberts for the experience, and quite legitimately Sam Warburton.
Yes.
Yeah, and perhaps Faletau to six. Because at the moment they have an eight, who's a kind of an 8-6 in, what's his name?
Reed, captain.
Reed's captain, and then Jerome Kano.
Jerome Kano, who's just that sledgehammer. So
I wouldn't have I wouldn't have Faletau ahead of either of those two.
Yeah. I know I've said it before, but I've been on pitch level with Kano jogging semi-fast towards me, and that's frightening enough. He's a massive man.
I can't see anything other than not just a New Zealand win, but a comfortable New Zealand. Well, I say comfortable. I think Wales will be competitive for maybe 50, 60 minutes.
Just remember, we live in a world, right, where Connacht have won the Pro 12, Leicester City have won the Premiership, and Michael Bisping is middleweight champion of the world.
And Japan beat South Africa.
Exactly.
And Donald Trump is a nominee for the American general election.
That's right. That's the last two.
That is nothing unusual about that to Jay.
No, it makes perfect sense. All adds up nicely. So, you know, if we knew, we wouldn't play, but I think you're right, Tim.
Yeah, I can't see anything other than a fairly handy.
I'm looking forward to finding out.
Yes, indeed.
And then 11 o'clock, we'll have a little break. You can have some brunch in between games.
Ooh, brunch.
And then it's Australia against England. A quick reminder, we will have a full in-depth preview of this game from the perspective of Australians on the Green and Gold podcast and us on the Egg Chasers Rugby podcast coming on... What day? What are we going to release that one on Tuesday, Jay, did you say?
Yeah, we'll put that on Tuesday morning. So your commute on Monday and Tuesday will be good.
There you go. Tuesday morning, look out for that one. But briefly speaking then... all right, well, same question. Let's keep it brief, though.
Well, I know. Why don't we shut up and just let Phil answer it? Because our stuff is on.
You're right.
It?
Go on, Phil. From your perspective, Englishman in that Aussie team.
Interesting. I'd probably have Watson on the wing.
Yep.
I wouldn't have Mike Brown over Folau. The Australian wings are a little bit unsettled at the moment. In the centre. I love Kurundrani.
Yeah, he's great.
He'll play inside centre. I saw someone said the other day that Leofano's lined up for inside
centre. Yeah, apparently. He's waiting on the birth of a child, but he hasn't trained yet. Kavita is the one that's sort of on standby to step in.
Yeah, and
Carmichael Hunt.
And Karevi as well as...
Hunt's... Yeah, he's lined up for inside centre as well. And possibly Rob Horn can play there. It'll be out of position. 10... I think Bernard Foley is class, but on current form, I'd probably go with Farrell.
Definitely.
Watson and Farrell?
Watson and Farrell. 9, I wouldn't have Ben Youngs. I would have Billy. I'd probably have Billy Pocock and Hooper. That would be my back row.
Billy in for Fardy.
Yes, Billy in for Fardy, move Pocock to 6. Yeah. So you maintain Pooper.
Yeah.
I probably would have Kruis and Itoji. And then props, I'd have Mako and I'd probably have Hartley over Stephen Moore. Although I do rate
Mako over
Scott Seo
and Kepo are class.
Yeah. And Kepo's going back because he's at Bordeaux at the moment.
He's gone back.
He's going back to the
playing for
Waratahs next season. Yeah.
He's
I'd have Kepu, Hartley. See you or Mako. I'll go for Mako for now. I'll go for Mako for now.
So that suggests a real evenness up front.
Yes.
A real good battle up front. And maybe, well, the Englishmen that you picked are game breakers. Farrell has that potential to boss a game and Watson.
Yeah. But I don't think Farrell is a million miles ahead of Foley. I really rate Foley. He's such a good all-round player.
I think the Green and Gold boys would like you.
Did that roughly stack up with what they've said?
Well, you'll listen and find out. Listen and find
listen
out.
On Tuesday. I will be listening, Tim.
I think the series is going to be 2-1 to Australia.
And I think, as I said before, England can take some positives out of that.
JB's already given us his spoiler alert from the podcast coming on Tuesday. He thinks it's going to be a 3-0 whitewash
to
England.
Well,
we haven't won a test there since 2000 and... We haven't won a match against Australia in Australia since 2010.
No, Tim,
and haven't ever won a series
as
in Australia.
Wow. As they say,
you did win a World Cup in Australia.
Yeah. This is true.
As they say in the world of investment, past performance is no guide to the future.
Which you're hoping, because Wales' last performance was pretty bad.
Yeah.
So then, continuing the games on Saturday.
Yeah.
South Africa host Ireland.
Yes. Of course, I think I mentioned Argentina, Ireland earlier in the podcast. Of course,
did you?
That was
Italy.
Just a slip of the tongue.
Argentina, Italy.
South Africa, Ireland.
South Africa, Ireland is
Oh, that's a meat grinder.
Yeah. I'm not sure with the injuries that Ireland have got whether this is going to be much fun for them at all. I think this could be a fairly comfortable. And South Africa are a team in transition, very much so, with a new coach and some players retiring. So it'll be interesting to see how it goes, but I do expect South Africa win.
We just look at Lock for an example. You just look at the gulf between South Africa and Ireland.
Yeah, Hendo is a fine player,
player.
I think he'll be playing lock, but and he's up there in my opinion with some of the best young locks in the world. He should be in that discussion. I don't think Devin Tolan is quite of that standard.
Toner and Hendo against
Etzebeth
De Jager and Etzebeth.
Luke De Jager.
Here's the thing, I've not really seen enough of any South African teams to have any clue if they're going to be good. I mean, I assume they're good because of South Africa, and I assume that they'll be big. But I don't get very excited about Ireland at the moment either. I think Ireland are pretty poor. I think
this is why many injuries. Ireland.
They have got a lot of injuries.
They could have McCloskey, who is a warrior.
Yeah,
and they decided not to.
You say they could have McCloskey, but what I think and why I think it's going to be so difficult for England is, and I'm definitely not getting carried away with Eddie Jones's six games in charge, and I hope I'm wrong, but we have beaten very robotic, pragmatic, quite dull teams, really, and we've broken that down by winning collisions and actually offering a little bit of something else, and that's how we've beaten France and Ireland and Wales. But I don't think...
I think you mean rather unfair there.
I honestly think, look at the World Cup. I think the Northern Hemisphere rugby sides are in a bad way.
No, not at all. I mean, look, I think England beat Wales last time round because their backline runners are so dangerous. Every time they run at you, you might scrag them, but they get over the gain line, and that gives you front foot ball. Yeah, the forwards are very confrontational, but that's what forwards do.
Oh, I know. But I guess what I'm saying is the opposition that these sides are going to be posed in Australia, South Africa and New Zealand is unlike anything, and certainly in the case of England, who've won these last six games.
And on the hard track.
The threat that Australia are going to offer is completely on another plane to what we've been playing against.
Yeah, but do you know what? I think the threat that England will offer Australia is substantial.
Oh, no, I agree. I think that'll be the closest to the three games.
I mean, their attacking threat is quick. But my God, Jonathan Joseph on what is effectively like a sevens pitch, Watson. You've got Brown, you've got Yordle travel too. You could even throw Wade into that mix. It's
Although
a terrifying...
he's actually in South Africa.
Yeah, yeah.
He'll be playing on the Friday night.
Yeah. But, you know, it's a terrifying prospect for any of the Southern Hemisphere teams because these guys are so fast.
It's interesting. I do think 2-1... I agree with you, Tim. 2-1 to Australia.
3-0 England.
Well, hear him now.
Mock him later.
Now, I don't know if you can sort of refer to this in the same way, but this the final game of Saturday, you could have referred to as the Scrum Bowl in years gone by. It was just basically a battle of two front rows in the past, Argentina and Italy, but both sides are undergoing something of a change in the way that they play and approach the game.
Yes, but it's kind of like when something goes wrong, you revert to type, and the Super Rugby season for Argentina has been nothing short of glorious, actually, in all the wrong ways. And as for Italy, yeah, you are right. They have expanded a little bit, but they're going to be away. They're going to rely on their strength. Argentina are going to rely on their strength. I don't think you'll see anything other than big scrummaging.
Well, it's interesting because I think I'm right in saying that for this game, a lot of the French-based Argentinian players won't be travelling, which therefore basically makes it Los Jaguares.
Wow!
So are they going to play? Are they going to play? It's pretty much going to be a Jags first team.
Oh, let's see. Oh, this is the test about the transition. How good is having them all together for the national team?
Quick question. How will they play?
Who are the French guys who could bolster that team?
Imhoff, Juan Martin, Fernandez, Lobby.
Yep. Lobby, sorry, yeah.
Albacete, he doesn't really play for him anymore, does he? He's retired from international rugby, hasn't he? I don't know.
That might be about it. It's Nicolas Sanchez. It depends if Cubelli, the starting scrum half, who plays for Brumbies. Depends whether he's travelled. He probably will have done. So it might be. Because, there might not be that many players.
No, I don't think there is. Maybe there's, what's his name, from Bath. He's not.
Aguja.
He's not like a huge with game changer. Marcelo Bosch.
Cicinho from Newcastle. He's yeah.
Cicinho, no. Cicinho's very good, actually.
No, but I know, but he's not
squad,
international.
He's a squad
oh,
player.
Oh, no, he is. He is an international.
No, he made the World Cup squad.
Played a couple of minutes.
I think he finally played against Ireland.
Yeah, no, but not played. He came on.
I think he didn't start.
He had substantial game time, I'm sure of it.
Look, ooh, I don't know about that. Yeah. Anyway.
I'll look it up. He's very,
but basically, we get to see the Jags. Oh, and Tello9 on Twitter at Rugby Podcast said that they've been teaching their 2-year-old child to say Los Jaguares.
Good.
How make that the first word, Lucy J.
Los Jaguares.
Los Jaguares.
Do you know what I've been singing? My wife Layla, who is a tiny bit mental when it comes to the child.
In what way, Jay? Expand. Well, talk about it more on the podcast. This is the perfect forum for it.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about things which won't make any difference to a child growing up, it'll probably be like exposing them to the French language when they're less than 6 months old. It will make no difference. They don't understand. So they've been singing, you know, nursery rhymes in French and Spanish, and clearly this is not going down too well in my household. Foreigners. So I've gone out my way to sing to Lucy the Chiefs song, because it's nice, it's basic, exactly. And at the end of it, I move a little hand and go, Chiefs, 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 Chiefs. And the first few times it caused tears, but now she's starting to really get into it. And we're, what, 3 weeks in? Weeks into singing Chiefs?
Nice.
So I'm determined that her first song will not be French Old MacDonald or Monsieur MacDonald, it'll be the Chiefs song.
Wait until she gets a little bit older and you meet other parents whose kids just makes like an incoherent noise. They'll just go, and the parent goes, yes, Constantinople, that's right, yes. Oh, he's very advanced. Happens all the time.
Oh, I am dreading it. Anyway, rugby.
Anyway, do you want to know how many minutes Cicinho played?
Let's have a guess. I'll go for 17 minutes in total in the World Cup.
Wow, in total. That'll take me a few seconds to find out.
I think he played three of the games. I'm sure he even got a start.
First question was against Ireland. How many minutes did he play?
I think he played at least 30 minutes.
I can tell you he wasn't even in the 23.
Oh, they are then. Completely wrong.
He did start a game.
Oh, he did? Okay, fair enough. And went off after 17 minutes, hopefully?
No, he started against Namibia in their 64-19 win. And he
kicked a couple of conversions.
Kicked 4 out of 4, okay. Although he wasn't kicking the whole match.
He's got good quads.
He took on kicking duties later on. So he played 65 minutes there, and that was his only appearance.
Was that it? I seem to think he's done the more than that. Has he had any other caps outside of the World Cup?
I don't think so. Yes, he has. He's had 4 caps, so presumably in the warm-up games.
Oh well.
Very good.
Right.
I'm just going to say. Yeah. I mentioned it briefly. Then the Saxons do play on the Friday night at 6 p.m. Against South Africa. So that'll be an interesting game.
Mm. It will be an interesting game, actually, because they're a very, very high quality side, the Saxons.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see what kind of South African guy. Obviously, they will be playing against a big physical pack. That goes without saying. And it's how they equip themselves to meeting that challenge. Because they've got some handy players. Players with full international experience, like Kieran Brooks, like Dave Atwood.
Mm. Yeah.
And they've got some big, big boys in the forwards, like Dave Ewers, coming in. So it'll be interesting.
It's the start of the under-20s Rugby World Cup on Tuesday as well. We live in Manchester, and that's where the tournament's happening. It's happening at Sale Sharks Ground, the AJ Bell Stadium, and it's happening at the Manchester City Academy Stadium.
Which is still like a 10,000-seater stadium.
Oh, it's brilliant. It's an amazing setup. It's got a bridge from that over to the main stadium. It's the whole complex is ridiculous, or the campus, as they call it, is ridiculous. The Etihad campus. So, yeah, we'll keep our eagle eyes on some of the future stars in those coming games. So yeah
it'd be interesting.
We've got our eyes on that for you.
Maybe pick a few stars at the end of the tournament, maybe pick a few players who we think might do a Maori Todgy at some point down the line.
Just going back to the Ireland game, right? You all know who is at the head of the South African conference, who is leading it?
Well, they're all an absolute shambles, aren't they?
Ireland's leading one.
Mm-hmm.
Cheaters? I don't know.
No, cheaters.
And who's
well.
The overall? Who's overall highest performer if you look at the
in the South African conference, taking the two tables as one table.
Yeah, because you combine them, you can look at one. Tiebreakers. Who's the best South African team there?
Well, Sharks. Haven't the Kings been able to rack up some wins just by playing Los Jaguares and the Sunwolves?
I think that might be their only wins. I don't think they've won a single of the game, the Kings. And they only beat Los Jaguares in South Africa because they had two men sent off.
And the third one in the bin.
In the bin, down to 12 men at one point. So Kings are not good.
No.
Sharks are doing okay, and Stormers are doing okay. Bulls are a bit up and down. Cheetahs, not great. Lions, good. Kings, bad.
Yeah, well, Lions...
Is that broadly correct?
Well, Lions are the number one team in South Africa.
Yeah.
I've just pulled up their squad now. I don't know many of these boys at all.
Is, what's his name? The
Elton Yantjes?
Yeah, Yantjes, the number
the
eight.
Fly half. Is it
Whittle?
There's Warren Whiteley.
Whiteley.
I've never heard of him.
He's a number eight. He's apparently...
Jacko Creel? No. I don't know any of these guys. I don't know any of them.
They're all massive. They all eat lots and lots of steak, rare.
I imagine they do.
And
blue.
They all cast a huge shadow when they stand next to you on the beach.
There's one called Malcolm Marks, which is perfect for communist or springbok.
That was one of the question times.
Oh yeah, that was the question time questions. We had a few people saying more Nazi war criminal or springbok.
Yeah, there was a few. We do need to resurrect.
We need some more un-PC games, please, JB.
I'll sort some out. Don't you worry about that. Maybe for the next free weekend of rugby, which I think is scheduled for 2021.
Done. Pencil that in, guys. 2021, more politically incorrect games on the Egg Chasers Rugby podcast. Keep an ear out for...
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Are we kind of done in terms of what we're doing?
I think so.
Yeah, we are done. Just one last thing.
I was just going to say. So keep an ear out for the podcast that's coming. Another podcast from Egg Chasers coming on Tuesday. Thank you very much for listening. Subscribe. It may already be there in your iTunes already. This week there is two episodes. Make sure you listen to them both. If that's not enough rugby, then I don't know.
Well, I know exactly what.
Do you? Oh, yeah. Go on, JB.
I do, actually. There's been a bit of confusion.
No, there's been no confusion. Just say what it is.
I have a new podcast. It is called The Rugby Dungeon. I have no idea how long it'll last for. I don't know if I'll be able to get guests on it every week, but I'm certainly going to try it, and we've got the first few recorded. Just me and a rugby player or someone in the sport of rugby with an interesting story, and we just sit down here and we chat. So we've done one with Dean Schofield so far, one with Tom Brady, and one which will be coming out this week with Hayden Smith from Saracens. Tom Brady, by the way, the sail winger. I must stop just casually referring to him as Tom Brady, assuming you all know...
How you PR something. If you want to get this spread far and wide...
And Peyton Manning, the scrum half from Isha.
Find that out after they've listened.
Yeah.
I think what you've just realised is that when these microphones are recording and that door is shut, you can't be bothered by your missus.
Oh, no.
So you're just filling up as much of your calendar rugby chat as possible.
Get out! The mics are hot! Get out!
You've told me a few times that you like to let yourself in through the back door so your wife doesn't...
If she finds out about this.
Sneak down here, because it's soundproof. You can do whatever you want in here.
Put on the TV, the phone goes like at 7:30. Where are you? Oh, I'm stuck in traffic. Go back out the back door. Back to the front door. I say, oh, hi, sweetheart. How are you doing?
God, real tough day.
Yeah. Just gone through several episodes of Mad Men or something in the dungeon. Thank God for the dungeon.
I wish I had a dungeon.
Yeah, everyone needs one.
Well, looking forward to hearing it. Quick reminder again, if you're still listening, thank you very much. Cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers. Get on board with and see why everyone else is. At Rugby Podcast on Twitter. Subscribe on iTunes.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
They cast two episodes this week. Nice one, Phil.
Thank you, Tim.
Top work, JB.
Thank you, Tim.
In a bit.
Bye-bye.